Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, wishing you a very happy new year. But meanwhile, here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI celebrates the Feast of the Holy Family and shares lunch with the city's poor. A member of the community of Sant'Egidio, for decades in the front lines in caring for the poorest of the poor, tells us about that special lunch with the Pope and about the community's mission. As we prepare to celebrate the beginning of a new year, Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright reflects on food and on the right of all to receive their daily bread. And film critic Peter Malone tells us the personal story of one of the most celebrated songwriters of our times. Pope Benedict XVI on Sunday celebrated the Feast of the Holy Family. And as part of the celebration, he joined the poorest of the poor for lunch in the soup kitchen of the community of Sant'Egidio. Charles Collins has this report.
Pope Benedict on Sunday had lunch with the poor, an event arranged by the Sant'Egidio community, a Rome-based ecclesial movement.
Rivolgo infine un particolare pensiero a tutti gli amici di Sant'Egidio e a ciascuno dei...
Visiting the city's Trastevere district, the Pope said he came to eat with the poor to tell them he is close to them and loves them. He said their situation is never far from the thoughts of the Pope, but are at the heart of the community of believers. The Pope ate at a table with 10 people, ranging in age from 24 to 90. Some were immigrants, others have always lived in the poorer parts of Rome. He told them he knows they know what trouble means, but God is there to love them and help them. He said he visited on the Feast of the Holy Family because the family of Jesus also knew hardship, from there being no room at the inn to fleeing to Egypt because of the threat of Herod. As he left, he told those who work with the community of Sant'Egidio to make sure no one is alone, no one is marginalized, no one is abandoned.
Impegnatevi perché nessuno sia solo, nessuno sia marginato, nessuno sia abbandonato.
Earlier in the day, Pope Benedict greeted pilgrims in St. Peter's Square for the Sunday Angelus, at which he also spoke about the day's feast.
Today we celebrate with joy the Feast of the Holy Family, who shared with us this fundamental human experience. I pray that the Lord may bless all Christian families and assist them in living their daily life in mutual love and in generosity to others after the example of Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
He said the family was an icon of the Trinity, both by its example of interpersonal love and its mission of procreation. The Pope also sent greetings in Spanish to a special meeting of families in Madrid being sponsored by that nation's bishops.
Saludo cordialmente a los pastores y fieles congregados en Madrid para celebrar con gozo la Sagrada Familia de Nazaret.
In his greeting, he called on Spanish families to bear witness calmly but firmly to the fact that the family is based on the marriage of a man and a woman, so as to safeguard it and promote it. He said this is of the utmost importance for the present and the future of humanity.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. Christmas lunch with the poor has been a steadfast tradition of the community of Sant'Egidio since 1982. That was the first year in which a small group of poor people of the area, many of them homeless, gathered around a specially prepared Christmas table inside the Basilica of Santa Maria in Trastevere. More than 20 years have gone by, and year after year, the table has become larger and larger, metaphorically reaching many other parts of the world in which the community of Sant'Egidio is present. In the year 2000, tens of thousands of people in 52 different countries took part in the celebrations. Amongst them, many homeless people, prison inmates, and men and children who live their lives in institutions. These are the very people that the community reaches out to 365 days a year. If you don't know the community of Sant'Egidio, it began in Rome in 1968, shortly after the Second Vatican Council. Today it's a movement of lay people and has more than 50,000 members dedicated to evangelization and charity in Rome, Italy, and in more than 70 countries throughout the world. It calls itself a church public lay association, and the different communities spread through the globe share the same spirituality and principles which characterize the way of Sant'Egidio. As any of its members will explain, these are prayer, which is central to the overall direction of community life, communicating the gospel, which is the heart of the life of the community, solidarity with the poor, ecumenism and dialogue as a way of peace and cooperation among the religions, and also as a way of life and as a means of resolving conflicts. But let's get back to Christmas lunch with the poor. As always, this year the Sant'Egidio community organised a series of initiatives tidying the most vulnerable people of society across the festive season. The highlight, of course, was undoubtedly Pope Benedict's lunch with the poor at the soup kitchen on Sunday. Just a few days ago, before the event, I got together with Claudio Betti, a member of the Sant'Egidio community, and asked him to tell me about the community and, of course, about the event itself. It's a special season for all of us, and especially for Sant'Egidio, which has a long tradition of caring for the poor all year round. And at Christmas, which is maybe more of a difficult time for the poor, has a lot of initiatives. What's more, the Pope is participating. He's actually sharing lunch this year. Is it the first time?
Regarding the Pope, definitely it is the first time. And we are happy that... With this visit, it really marks an important moment for Sant'Egidio. I think that the fact that the Pope is visiting Sant'Egidio, but not only visiting Sant'Egidio, this is very important to say. The Pope has visited us three times with this already.
You mean this Pope?
The first time was in Naples a couple of years ago for the interreligious meeting for peace. And the second time it was in San Bartolomeo, where he visited the Shrine of the Martyrs of the 20th century. And this time, at Christmas, he visits the poor of the community. I think that it is very meaningful. It is not visiting only Sant'Egidio. I think it's a very important thing for us to say. He's visiting us, but he's also saying that he cares for the things that we do. So interreligious meeting, the memory of the martyrs, and especially service to the poor. And he marks the fact that this Christmas, and Christmas as such, is not a consumeristic feast. It's not a celebration to be celebrated only among yourself, but it's something that has to give to the others.
Coming to Sant'Egidio on December the 27th, he's not just visiting, he's actually sitting down and having lunch with the poor.
Yes, and that even makes it more significant. Sharing, it is what we have been doing and what we do throughout the year. The poor are not clients of the community, and the poor are not external to the church. The poor are members of the church, and the fact that the Pope is sitting down with them, it tells us and the church that the poor have a place at the table of the church, are not external, are not someone to serve in special moment, but are someone to bring in and to care as if they were relatives of ours. And that's very important that he sits down and eats with them.
I think that's super. Have any other popes ever sat down to have a meal with them?
Oh, yes. John Paul II did as well. He didn't come to the... I don't know if he did in other places. I know what regards Sant'Egidio. He invited the poor in the Vatican, at the Vatican. I remember that very much. And it was a very beautiful dinner, a very beautiful meal. It was held at the Aula Paolo VI. Mm-hmm. And it was very beautiful. There were about 100 poor people coming from all over the city who sat down with him.
Tell me about Sunday. How many people have been invited, and what's the menu?
We have various things going on for Christmas. We start on the 24th, as usual. The 24th is a roaming meal. Many poor people in our city, as in most of the cities of the world, are very stable, and they sit in their places for various reasons. Some of them are afraid that if they leave their place that someone else will take it. So we have to go and look for them. And so instead of inviting them to eat with us, we go and we have ourselves invited by them. So we bring food to them. And that takes place in the evening between 7 and 10 on the 24th. And I'm thinking about 100 places, different places in the city where that will be reached by these roaming dinners.
Okay, so the volunteers, they all have some food with them. They get in their cars or bikes or whatever, and they go to the places where they know these people are and sit down and eat with them?
Is that exactly, yes. That's what normally happens. It's a warm meal, and then drinks and hot drinks, cocoa, coffee, milk, and then we have some spumante or champagne and Christmas cakes. On the 25th in the morning, everything begins around 12 o'clock when the Church of Santa Maria in Trastevere is transformed into the beautiful room where the poor are welcomed. And it's not only Santa Maria in Trastevere. It really started in Santa Maria in Trastevere, I remember. When we started with a small group of 10, 12 very poor people of Trastevere. But then it became something more. And not now, I think, throughout the city of Rome, we have about 10,000 people who are invited to eat with us. And there the meal is very rich. It's a banquet more than a meal. I mean, the way things are prepared, the way they are served, it really resembles a banquet. There is a psalm that says, the Lord has taken the poor from the trash and made them sit at the table of the kings of the world. I think that this is what Santa Egidio wants to do at Christmas. Take the poor from their life, from their ordinary life, and make them sit as if they were the kings of the world. I know people may say this is only for one day, but it is not true. It is something that goes on throughout the year, and this is what I think has to be done. I mean, Christmas is a sign, but then there is a daily life, which has to be a daily life of closeness with the poor. The meal is, a banquet, and we have lasagna. We have mashed potatoes with, I think it's meatballs. And then we have lentils, which is the typical food for Christmas, and we have the Christmas cakes.
We're talking very generically about poor, and I assume many of them are homeless. Are there also people who may be not homeless but are in dire conditions, with children maybe?
Very much so. We have all kinds of people coming to the meals, and we really serve all kinds of people. Most of them would be homeless, I would say, homeless immigrants, refugees, who have a very difficult life in our city. But the economical crisis has hit hard in our days, and probably the poor are beginning to experience the hardship of this crisis much more than in the past. I think that, the big financial, the rich people have already experienced it, and maybe it is true that it's over for most of the people. But for the poor, it's not the same. The poor are beginning to suffer now and will suffer much more than we did in the past for this crisis. And we are beginning to see, for example, elderly who are coming to our soup kitchen. We are, and many of them...
Because they can't survive on their pensions?
They cannot survive on their pension. The cost of life, they're not able to survive. I mean, the medicines are higher. And we are seeing families who have lost jobs, for example. It is enough in a family where to work. When one loses the job, it is enough to break the family. And they're not able to make it. People of our community, ourselves, who are middle-class people, sometime have difficulties arriving to the end of... And this is something which is important to say. We are beginning to see the need of a solidarity which is much greater today than it was in the past. I think that solidarity today has to be has to become larger than it was in the past because of this economical crisis, because this economical crisis is also touching the moral fabric of our society, and people tend to be more alone and more selfish, and understandably so. But we as Christians cannot give up to that. We cannot give in to that, this selfishness. It is some, we cannot be acquiescent to an idea of a life which is spent only for myself.
Getting back to the meal with the Pope, which is quite a highlight, lunch with the Pope, lots of people must want to be there. How did you make your invitations? How did you choose who was to be there?
Well, first of all, you have to picture the place where it's going to take place. It's the soup kitchen where the community welcomes the poor every day. And there are two rooms that welcome more or less 200 people sitting down. This is the maximum that we will welcome that day. Normally, we welcome 1,500 a day, but they take turns. It's in 5 hours a turn. So we have to limit that to about 200, 250 at most. We are still discussing on that. And they have been chosen to represent the people who are coming to the soup kitchen. It's purely a representation idea. I mean, we have to choose representatives of various groups that are coming. So some homeless, we will have some old people, we will have people who are coming from foreign countries, from immigrants, refugees, children, Roma, gypsies.
Okay, thank you, Claudio. Is there anything that you'd like to say to our listeners at this time of the year?
Well, I need to add one thing. What we did in Rome, what we started to do in Rome, so we have 10,000 new people in Rome, but throughout the world, the experience of Rome has multiplied. Last year, we had 100,000 people served at dinner, at lunch, at Christmas, which is something which it means that good can be communicated. There is a kind of, you get sick of many things, but it's difficult to get sick of good. You know, it's like the flu. You can communicate the flu, but you can also communicate good. I think that the need we have today is that of being people who communicate good. And that is why we do these things at Christmas. We do them all the year around, and Christmas is a way of making it clear to everyone. And I must say, we couldn't do this if we didn't have the thousands of volunteers who come at Christmas. And we have people of all kinds. I mean, we have from ambassadors to professors who probably have only that day in their year to come and serve the poor. But they do. And this means that it's something that can be communicated. I think that this is a great message in a world that, as today, doesn't expect much from the future. I think that we have to say very clearly that someone is really coming in the world, and this is Jesus Christ, and Jesus is really able to change our world.
And we can all really, wherever we are in the world, we can all sit down at table or wherever with someone to share whatever we have for Christmas or leave a gift or whatever, right?
Exactly. Everybody can do something. And there is the need of being friend of at least the poor. A poor person must be present in our life. And can you imagine the world where everybody is a friend of another poor person? I mean, the world would be much better. And I think that this is a way. And if the people who listen do not know how to do it, just call us. I mean, we'll be able to help. We have communities all over the world, and we'd be glad to help you in this.
That was Claudio Betti, a member of the Saint Egidio community in Rome. As we prepare to celebrate the coming of the new year, Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright reflects on food and on the right of all to receive their daily bread.
Every one of us needs food to live. But how often do we reflect on food in all the different dimensions that food brings to our lives? I'd just like to say a few words, if I may, focus on bread, which is, along with in whatever form, is part of a staple diet of the majority of the peoples of our world. And we can reflect that in order that we have bread, someone has to grow it. And to grow it properly and efficiently requires not just human labour, but a sophisticated system of seeds and fertilizers and pesticides. And also the weather. And in some places the weather is predictable, and other places less predictable. A good harvest and a bad harvest can alternate with alarming frequency. So the bread we eat is the product of technology, of inventiveness, but also of hard labour and a system of getting that food from the field across the oceans to my home. But behind that, there is also a sense in which our landscape, our natural world, must be able to grow things. And of course, in a normal state of affairs, we would expect things to be roughly the same year on year. But as we know, there are places in our world where the climate has changed in the last 15 or 20 years. It's got drier, or it's got wetter. And this, of course, affects what we can grow, how we feed ourselves. The food we eat and the food our neighbour has to eat should belong to the same category, available. But if the climate changes, that availability is going to be reduced. But then there is a sense in which some of us have problems with eating too much. We're overweight. And others of us don't have enough. And our life is limited and restricted because the energy we have from the food is simply not enough to give us the energy to work the full day. It makes us more vulnerable to disease and illness and sickness. And then there are those for whom food is part of our way of welcoming the stranger, our hospitality. And we can offer that hospitality to anyone who knocks at our door. But then there are some people to whom we would not want to give hospitality because of their evil intent, their desire to exploit. And then there is the food which comes and goes. The food which is the sign of something deeper. The food we call Eucharist. The food which is the presence of Christ to challenge us to appreciate the world, the farming world which produces the food. Challenges us to modify our habits to ensure that hunger is reduced, malnutrition is overcome. Eucharist which is challenging us to appreciate our natural world and care for the environment. Eucharist, which challenges us to see in each visitor the presence of God. And for us Christians, Eucharist challenges us to see that it is the presence of the risen Christ, to remind us that the food that endures is not the physical food we need today. More importantly, it is the spiritual food which leads us to the ever-deepening intimacy with God, an intimacy built out of our faith, nourished by our scriptures, celebrated in our Eucharist, adored in the silence of our prayer, and affirmed, welcomed, appreciated, forgiven in each person of whatever age, from whatever place, whom we meet today.
You've been listening to Benedictine abbot Timothy Wright. And now it's over to my friend, film critic Peter Malone, who heads the film office at Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. Today he tells us the personal story of one of the most celebrated songwriters of our times.
Yes, Nowhere Boy is the story of the man who wrote the song Nowhere Man.
Right.
It's a story about John Lennon and his childhood and adolescence.
My father and my mother split when I was about 4.
I put a spell on you.
And I was brought up by an auntie.
Ireland.
In Liverpool.
In Liverpool, it's, yes.
I was surprised to learn what you said in your review and watch the trailer. I didn't know that John Lennon's personal story was so dramatic.
Just remember all I have done for you. You would be in a children's home!
When I was 16, I had met with my mother.
Because!
Yes, it's... I hadn't thought too much about it. I suppose I knew in general. But this film, by the way, is approved by Yoko Ono, but some of his family are not so keen on it. Mm-hmm. But somebody then remarked that he actually had a nickname, an affectionate name for Yoko Ono as Mother. And when you see the film and his whole experience of mothers and absence of mothers, you can understand that there was something about him that was disturbed and struggling for affection, and that comes through very strongly in the film.
She'll hurt you.
Let's tell people why.
Well, I think it's not because of the performance of Aaron Johnson as Lennon, which is okay, but the two actresses who perform as his mother and his aunt who looked after him are very strong indeed. They're excellent performances. His mother is played by Anne-Marie Duff, who's a good British actress and appears in quite a number of films, actually in a film about Tolstoy, which we'll speak about right in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But she's his mother and acts as a kind of flibbertigibbet, maybe bipolar in her behaviour, and she really gave him up, although she lived down the street. But the aunt, her older sister, who brought John Lennon up, is played by Kristin Scott Thomas, whom I wouldn't immediately associate with the film about Beatles. But she's a rather prim 1950s matron, reminded me of her manner and look of what Queen Elizabeth looked like, I suppose, in the 1950s and 60s. So the two actresses really make the film and help us understand John Lennon's experience with his aunt and then the discovery of his mother and trying to relate to her with the disappointment of her abandoning him in the past.
Me and Mum have had a bit of a heart-to-heart. Yeah, she said you stole me. Your mother walked out.
You chose to take my son.
I must say, it looks like lots of fun meeting Paul McCartney when he was so young and also Ringo Starr, I think it is, who's the other...
George Harrison yeah, is in it, yes.
And also Liverpool in the 1950s and 60s. It looks like a really good portrait of the place and the people.
I'm done. Paul.
Horizontal from the elbow. Strong from the wrist. John, be serious.
Yes, it does. They've found very good locations, so you actually get the feel with the locations, decor, costumes, that you are actually there. That's particularly strong. So I'd say even if a person is not a Beatles fan, the story of the son and the mothers is universal enough to make it, I think, quite an interesting film to watch.
You know what struck me watching the trailer, of course, is that I didn't hear any Beatles music in it.
No, there's copyright problems always with Beatles songs, especially sung by the Beatles. However, there is a song in it that Paul McCartney did compose when he was young.
If we're going to do this, we should write our own stuff.
I write stuff. Stories. Poetry, you know.
You had a tune to that and you got a song?
I do.
And I think John Lennon might have even written the lyrics for that. So there is something of that early performance, though... John Lennon was mad in the mid-50s on Elvis Presley and wanted to look and sing like him, so there's a bit of Elvis there instead of the Beatles.
Okay, thank you, Peter. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.